You're listening to In the Moment on SDPB. I'm Lori Walsh. Before the break, I spoke with our state geologist to understand the science of southeastern South Dakota's June flooding. Now we're going to talk a little bit about its politics. Our Dakota political junkies are going to take a look at how government officials respond to information they receive from scientists, and we'll look at how those leaders communicated with South Dakotans in the flood's path, and how they have, of course, been criticized for their communications during the disaster. Michael Card is a political scientist and professor emeritus at the University of South Dakota. He is seated across the table from me in SDPB's Kirby Family Studio in Sioux Falls now. Dr. Card, welcome back.
Thanks for having me here.
And joining us on the phone, John Hunter, publisher emeritus of the Madison Daily Leader and inductee to the South Dakota Newspaper Hall of Fame. Mr. John Hunter, welcome back as well.
Hi, Lori. Thanks for the invitation.
All right. Let's talk a little bit about social media accounts first, and then let's move into a little bit of flood disaster response and communication. It's John, I want to start with you a little bit from the media side of things. When you cover the way political leaders communicate, this social media thing is, it's not new, but you've been around before there was an X account for a governor. How did governors used to talk to people when it came to something like a flood disaster, and how have you seen it change over time?
Well, I think it's been a dramatic change, especially for Governor Noem. The difference is that really she and her public relations office or outreach office really want to say, we're going to tell you what we want to tell you. We don't want to respond to questions. So she doesn't like press conferences. She doesn't really, if you call in to ask the governor questions, they'll be deferred. If you call to cabinet positions, they'll say you need to submit your questions in writing. We might get back to you. But they have, in fact, and I'm not sure these are the exact words, but basically said, if you want to know anything, just go to social media and we'll tell you what we want to tell you. And that's a big difference. And I think there is a naturally citizens of South Dakota and small newspapers and radio stations and TV stations want to be able to ask their leaders questions. It might be something that might be uncomfortable, might be something that's not going well, rather than a very positive public message that can be sent out on social media. So Governor Noem has chosen this path. I think it's hard on citizens, harder, at least on the media, trying to get answers on behalf of citizens.
And meanwhile, more than 750,000 people were following the combined X and Facebook of Governor Kristi Noem's official social media accounts. And then those accounts recently just went dark over the 4th of July weekend. Mike Card, there's a new account, Ian Fury with the governor's office said, you know, follow the governor here on social media. Her personal account was still active. Do we have any idea what happened?
Other than what you just described is the one account is gone. The Kristi Noem account is still there with nearly 500,000 followers. And there are 13 followers on the governor's office, largely because there are press releases there. And so there is little new information. I think there's actually 13 news media and one person.
It's increasing quickly as people find out about it. But
that was yesterday.
It's a huge drop. Does it matter?
Well, I think what John mentioned is what really matters, and that is that the governor's office is filtering what news they wish to give out. And I think we all understand that is that if you're an elected official, you'd like to give your side of the story. What it doesn't necessarily provide is an answer or a response even to what the citizens want to know. Mm-hmm. As filtered through the media. And usually the media have thought about these and have more access to information, do a far deeper background look at what the issues are and what might be related to what. And so I'm probably one of the rare people that I believe that we do need the press. Of course, here I am talking to two press people, but as well as the rest
of
the
citizenry. It's a friendly room for that, yes.
You don't have to convince us.
But
go ahead.
The public wants to know, and the public has a right to know. And I think when we start to limit information that's given and limit access to our elected officials, democracy suffers because you have to be able to know in order to participate in the process of democracy.
And we have no way of knowing, John, why this decision was made, because the governor's office will not answer that question. They just say, it's over here now. So we don't know what happened, and we try not to speculate on this show. So I don't want to get into a 5-minute, it could be this, it could be that. But that's frustrating, John, because nobody knows why it happened, and it could be newsworthy why it happened. There are scenarios in my mind that would say that would be a newsworthy thing that we would the public would need to know. But it's silence. It's a complete no answer.
Well, I'll jump back
with
in,
you, Laurie, and I think you're very accurate in that. That is it news? I mean, it's probably newsworthy. Again, if someone gives up those that number of accounts or followers, and we don't know what it is now. So silence is very frustrating, and it isn't necessary. There's no reason you can't speak about this, unless it's something embarrassing or. And in some senses, I'd say it's better to be silent than to tell an untruth, that it's for some this reason and that's not the reason. So I'm hoping we'll still find out that there's merely a delay, and we'll hear an announcement in the next few days or whatever that there's a reason for it. But it is frustrating for the citizens of South Dakota.
Mike, what were you going to add there?
I was just going to say it. You know, I think one of the rationale for a little bit of citizen discomfort about the entire response to the flood is that, you know, things changed so fast, as Professor Kalman noted, and lo and behold, as things change fast, information gets to the elected officials and the officials in charge of responses slowly. Mm-hmm. It goes as fast as it can, as he noted. Previously, I don't have the exact quote, but he said, you know, the models in a flood like this aren't very accurate at the moment. Sometimes there are errors, and so in terms of helping out the McCook Lake folk, they may not have had the information there.
Yeah.
And so
I want to get to that. I have one more question about this social media thing, which is relevant to McCook Lake citizens and some of the questions they were answering. And I think one of the things Tim Kalman said is that the models weren't, this was such an extreme event that sometimes the models can't keep up with something that they haven't seen yet. And so that increased the challenges that they were looking at, that the analysts were looking at as the flood was unfolding. John Hunter, the archive disappears. And we don't think of social media being it's not a reliable archive. It's not like a public archive, but it is a very useful way to scroll back and say, she was here on this day, and on this day she said this, and here is tape from this interview because she is posting it, and that's all erased. Now, if the account goes dark and people are piecing it together from other places, it went dark after people had pieced together where she was at during the flood event. I'm not saying those are related. I'm just saying that happened in late June, and then over the 4th of July, the social media accounts left their public view. But John, what do we lose when a governor's official account disappears like that, as far as access to any kind of history and archival footage that we might be inadvertently starting to rely on?
Well, I think it's a huge loss, frankly. And again, you can document. It's part of, I think, really a broader issue of open records, open documents, open meetings that go on. And if you choose to hide certain documents or erase them or shred them or whatever that is, I think there's a loss there. Now, I'm not saying every document and every conversation, every email should be made public, but these are things that were made public. These are, and they were made public for a reason, whether it was for it was in the this is the governor's official thing. This is not her personal one or a campaign one. So it was released for a reason, whether it was I was here or I'm promoting myself. I mean, you can still promote yourself on official channels, but and then it gets erased. It is a big deal. And it's just not like we're finding document or we're looking for documents that never existed. This is stuff that was once made public and now is gone.
Mm-hmm. Mike, I'm thinking of Alexander Heffner's book, The Documentary History of the United States, where he has, you know, the founding documents and, famous speeches. And then in the most recent version, he starts adding tweets. And, you know, because this becomes the documentary history of the United States. And in the introduction, he eloquently discusses the decision to include certain tweets in the documentary history of the United States. As a political scientist, does that blow your mind as much as it blows mine?
Well, I think the other side of it is our laws haven't kept up with technological changes, yeah. You know, and Twitter or X, and I still call it Twitter. Boy, was that a Freudian slip. Twitter, since Supreme Court Justice Amy Coney Barrett said that she's going to call it Twitter, so I figure I can too. But, you know, it's those are... If that is the official account and it's made because she's a governor, that should be a public record. Yeah. And our record retention laws don't cover much in terms of social media.
All right. So let's talk about flood response and some of the criticisms that Governor Noem is taking very publicly from media outlets and citizens about how she warned people, when she warned people, and what she was doing when she wasn't warning people. John Hunter, you wanted to begin with this, that it's, I mean, let's just say right up front, it's so easy to armchair quarterback things. But when you look at the timeline, do you think there are some valid criticisms about where she was and where you would normally expect a governor to be?
I'd love to refer to another journalist here. Terry Wooster wrote a column in the last few days about governor responses to natural disasters. And he said, I didn't see the Noem one up front because he's not an active journalist like now, but he was at a front row seat for Governors Janklow, Rounds, and Dugard in each of those. And he saw them in those situations. And he said there's a broad range of possible ways to respond to it. Janklow was very much out in front, right? Even his statue in Pier has him with a bullhorn pointing at something, and he loved to go there, and he would bark orders and so forth, and mm-hmm. he was very active. But Governors Dugard and Rounds were more behind the scenes. But Terry did say that they were in the emergency operations center, you know, 6 a.m. till midnight, and they were working with people and making decisions. In other words, they had a different style than Governor Janklow, but they were still involved. They were still there. And Terry ends his piece, and I'll get into my own thoughts in a second, but Terry ends the piece basically saying, disasters are when South Dakotans need a governor the most, no matter what their crisis management style. So I think at the moment, I think most South Dakotans would have preferred a different response out of Governor Noem. In other words, yes, she did do the press conference there, and she doesn't. I don't think they're expecting any governor to lift sandbags or to drive a backhoe or something to help with that. But somehow you want them to be engaged, to be there, to maybe to put an arm around someone who has lost a home. Or I just think it seems to be more of an active thing rather than being in another city or state.
All right. She did a press conference on Sunday. Left the state, did some events, one including a fundraiser in Tennessee. She returned to South Dakota for press conferences on Monday and Tuesday. So it's not as if she did nothing. We need to go for now, but I think there's more to say. Oh, that clock is hurting me today. Mike Carr, John Hunter, thank you so much for being here. We appreciate your time.
Thanks for having us.
Take care.